goes up into the heat and the humidity. Hamilton is back, and that ball is wet. And that is blasted to center field. Back goes Hamilton, and Taylor goes deep. And the Royals have scored all three of their runs on a pair of home runs against Rodon in the first two innings.
And the Royals go on to win 5-0 over the White Sox on Thursday afternoon. We'll have much more coming up here momentarily on that here on the Sports Ticket. We welcome you into the Sports Ticket here on Katy Country 94. As, again, we'll talk about the Royals. They've sent away one of their veteran pitchers here ahead of the trade deadline. We'll tell you who it is, get Dayton Moore's thoughts on that. Also, a draft recap, NBA draft. There's also a big trade that happened ahead of the draft last night. And the SEC has officially sent invites to Texas and Oklahoma. We have an update on the Olympics as well here on the Sports Ticket on Katy Country 94. Can we welcome you in here on this Friday, July 30th. All right, well, you heard the homers from Perez and Michael A. Taylor. Boy, it's been a pretty good couple of days for Salvador and Michael A. Taylor as Salvi hit the home run that tied the game on Wednesday night to send it into extra innings, and Michael A. Taylor had the game-winning walk-off single that had the RBI, drove in the run there to win it on Wednesday. And then they got things started early with homers in the first and second inning, respectively, for Perez, a two-run homer in the first, Taylor a solo homer in the third. And so they got things started to pick, definitely picking up where they left off the night before and getting the Royals out to the 3-0 lead early to go on to win 5-0 over the White Sox against Carlos Rodon, again, of Chicago. As the Royals got 3 of 4 in the series, they have now won 7 of their last 8. As they come in now 45-56 after yesterday's win. Carlos Hernandez, the winning pitcher, he went 6 innings, held the White Sox scoreless on just 4 hits. Richard Lovelady pitched 2 scoreless innings and gave up 1 hit, so just 5 hits overall for the White Sox. Wade Davis closed out the shutout in the 9th inning. Royals manager Mike Matheny talked about Hernandez and his start with the 6 innings pitched. No runs, just 4 hits.
Yeah, I mean, he came out aggressive. We talked before the game, all of us, about how he, if he attacks the strike zone with everything that he has, and that's what he did. He had a really good mix. Changeup was pretty good. Slider was pretty good. And the curveball was very good. He had a lot of strike, swing and miss on the curveball. And then the fastball command, he just was very simple. I thought he had a lot of improvement on not so much wasted motion. You know, on a hot day like this, we're being very clear about get the ball, keep a good tempo, stay near the rubber. You don't need to do a victory lap on every pitch, and it's just adding extra movement. And so let's just try and minimize. But those are just lessons that young pitchers, when it's a 120, whatever it was on the field, they have to learn on the job. And he did a great job of following along, and Cam did a terrific job of just thinking ahead, being smart, and giving him a good target to look at all day.
Carlos Hernandez, the 24-year-old, one of the young pitchers for the Royals, and so far this year in 3 starts, he's 2-1, has a ERA of 4.98, which went down yesterday after, again, no runs in 6 innings, just 4 hits. He's pitched 34 and a third innings this year, struck out 42, walked 22, so those walk numbers a little bit high. Strikeout to walk ratio is about 2-1 there, and has given up 30 hits, 19 earned runs. I'm giving all these numbers for Carlos Hernandez because he's one of the pitchers that the Royals are looking to in the future, obviously. A young guy at 24, and he's one of the pitchers that's probably going to have to stay on this staff the rest of the season, along with guys like Daniel Lynch, Chris Bubich, who has had some starts here recently. Also, Brady Singer, maybe Jackson Coar comes back up. We'll see how that all goes. But those young guys are the guys that are going to take the Royals the rest of the way this season, it appears, other than Mike Minor. Mike Minor, an older guy in the rotation, and it appears that he'll stay there throughout the season here, the rest of the season. He has not been traded, and it doesn't sound like he will be traded before the deadline by the Royals. But one player was traded before the deadline by the Kansas City Royals. And I told you about all these young guys needing to stay in the rotation, because even if he would come back from his injury that he's dealing with right now, which is a injury that he's been battling injuries all season, but it is a left flexor strain for Danny Duffy, who is no longer a member of the Kansas City Royals. Off the field Thursday ahead of the trade deadline, Danny Duffy, who spent his entire 15-year time within the organization, his entire 11-year Major League Baseball career in Kansas City, he's headed to the Dodgers with some cash to help pay for the rest of his contract this year, as he will become a free agent in the winter. Duffy traded with some cash for a player to be named later, so we don't even know who the Royals are getting back yet for Danny Duffy. There's a list of guys that they apparently have been given by the Dodgers that they can continue to kind of track and then decide which one they want here coming up later this season. Duffy's currently on the injured list, as we mentioned, with a left flexor strain hampered by injury most of the season. He's made 12 starts, had a 4-3 record with a 2.51 ERA and 65 strikeouts in 61 innings. He is expected to return this season. It could help the Dodgers in their hopes to repeat as World Series champions. Duffy, again, will be a free agent this winter. I was trying to find some sound from Dayton Moore. I know he had a meeting with the media, but for some reason I just can't find the actual sound from him. So Kansas City Star has a story here of some of the things that Dayton Moore said. And Moore said, well, it's never easy. We truly love Danny. We've all been through a lot together. Thankful for his parents for trusting us out of the draft in 2007. We went through a lot of things throughout the minor leagues together, a lot of coaches, a lot of scouts, a lot of front office people, many teammates along the way, just a lot of great memories to celebrate. Those are forever part of our memory bank, and we'll cherish them. We'll look forward to new chapters as well. It's a new, exciting chapter for Danny as he gets the opportunity to pitch on the West Coast for the Dodgers. Of course, there's still the rehab process that he's going to have to continue to go through, and hopefully that'll work out great for him and the Dodgers. That's what we expect, and that's what we wish for, unquote. That was Dayton Moore's comments, and he went on to say of the second stint on the IL, when he went on the IL, put everything on pause, so there wasn't anything we could do, but there were a couple of teams still willing to look to do a deal with Danny. Obviously, the potential return had to change greatly because he's on the injured list. That's just part of the game. That happens, unfortunately, but we still felt that the return was value enough for us to do what was right for the organization and also do what was right for Danny. I do know that he had a desire to pitch for the Dodgers and be in a pennant race and potentially win a World Series. That was appealing to him, unquote. Danny Duffy is from L.A., so obviously it's a chance for him to go back to California. He was born, well, usually that says that right here on the bio, but I can tell you he's from the L.A. area, California. Went to Lompoc Cabrillo High School in Lompoc, California. And so, again, it's an opportunity for him to go back home and have a chance to be with a contender. Goleta, California is where he was born. So, again, he is from California, and he is now a member of the Los Angeles Dodgers. Again, still on the injured list right now, and the Royals, again, get a player to be named later in that trade. One of the guys that we've talked about that we thought might have some trade value. And apparently the Dodgers were willing to part ways with a player to be named later. Again, we'll find out who. But the Dodgers were willing to part ways to get Danny Duffy here yesterday. Last night, that trade was made by the Royals. Now, it is conceivable that Danny Duffy could be back with the Royals. Just a quick couple-month rental for the Dodgers, again, as Duffy is a free agent in the winter. I don't know if Dayton Moore and the Royals will pursue that to try to get him back on the team. Just kind of say, hey, we want you to have an opportunity here, but we also want you to come back to Kansas City. And I don't know if they've had any of those kind of discussions or not, but it is a possibility. I'm just throwing that out there, that even though he has been traded, he is a free agent coming up in the winter. So a chance for maybe if the Royals really want him and to bring him back, they can do that. So, man, I was scrolling through pictures last night, and I actually saw Danny Duffy's one of those. When a guy's in the organization for 11 years, you kind of get attached, right? He was also part of the teams that made it to the World Series. He has a World Series ring with the Royals, albeit in 2015. He was kind of coming out of the bullpen there in the playoffs. Didn't have his greatest year in 2015 when the Royals won the World Series, but again, was part of that group and part of the team that brought a lot of good memories to Kansas City Royals fans. So it's a guy that you'll miss. When I was scrolling through Instagram last night and actually saw a picture of Danny, and it said, you know, bury me a Royal or forever Royal, whatever it was. That's Danny has said bury me a Royal. Obviously, it's a different circumstance here where he's traded with a couple months left in the season. But so they had all these pictures of Danny's time in Kansas City, and there's one that really hit me hard. I was actually scrolling through, and when you see Danny with a kid that you know, he had a kid that I know very well from my time volunteering at muscular dystrophy camp. His name was Maddox Truitt, and he had Duchenne muscular dystrophy. We lost him. Oh, it's been over a year now, I think. Obviously, the service was during COVID last year, and things were kind of restricted as far as who could go, but we lost Maddox last year, and I was scrolling through that Instagram post and saw a picture of Danny with Maddox at a game at an event, really, I think, at Kauffman Stadium, and when it's something that hits you like a ton of bricks, that was it for me. So that's something personal for me here on the Sports Ticket. Not a lot of people probably know Maddox, but Maddox was a great kid, and we miss him for sure. And man, when I saw Danny with Maddox in that picture, I'm not gonna lie, I shed a little tear, and it hit me a little harder than I was expecting last night. But Danny Duffy, a class act, always was kind of is still. He's true to himself. He's not really sugarcoating a lot of things. He's gonna speak from the heart. He's gonna say how he feels. Not everything was peachy keen with Danny Duffy the whole time. Obviously, the situation with the Burger King drive-through, where he seemed to be under the influence when he was approached by law enforcement officers, and obviously got some bad pub for that. But for the most part, outside of that, man, Danny Duffy has been a class act and one of my favorite Royals. He is not always produced like we thought maybe he would. Didn't always have the best stuff as a starter that we were expecting and maybe hoping from Danny Duffy during his time in Kansas City. But man, he was a real one, and still is a real one. I say was because he's not on my team anymore that I cheer for, but he is a real one, Danny Duffy. And it's gonna be tough to see. It's just tough to see guys like that go. Now, is it the right business move? Absolutely, I feel like it is. Because even if the Royals, whoever their player to be named later is, this team, even though they're hot right now, winning eight of their last nine now, I believe. After yesterday, it's 8 of 9. So I think I already mentioned that earlier in the show. But even winning 8 of their last 9, they're still 11 games under .500. So this is a team that really doesn't appear to be going anywhere this year, and Duffy's been on the injured list. So it's like, okay, trade him away. If you can get just anything for him for the last 2 months, you're coming out ahead, I feel like, because he really hasn't been out much this year. As Dayton Moore said, value goes down a little bit when the guy's on the injured list and only has 2 months left and is not even back yet. He's still doing rehab. So the Dodgers are clearly making this deal because they're hoping to have some extra help with an arm. I don't know if he's going to be a starter. I don't have the Dodgers rotation right in front of me, but they also made another trade or are attempting to finalize another trade that would add a very prominent starting pitcher that we'll tell you about here momentarily. But it's clearly moved by the Dodgers to help bolster either their bullpen or whatever they're doing, maybe a spot start here or there, and maybe long relief as well once they do get to the postseason as they're trying to repeat as World Series champions. So clearly a good move for the Dodgers and Royals both, I feel like, right now, because the Royals are out of contention and they're going to get somebody back. And then, as I mentioned, Royals could easily say, hey, Danny, come back to Kansas City here in the winter when he's a free agent. So this one is, yeah, kind of a no-brainer for the Royals to do if somebody wanted Danny Duffy's services. Okay, so as I mentioned, the Dodgers are also finalizing a trade that started Thursday night to acquire pitcher Max Scherzer and shortstop Trey Turner from the Nationals for 4 prospects. So the Dodgers looking to add there as well. And I'm going to kind of pull up that story here. And again, they're looking to get Scherzer and Trey Turner. And in that deal, they would send prospects right-handed pitcher Josiah Gray, catcher Kybert Ruiz, right-handed pitcher Gerardo Carrillo, and outfielder Donovan Casey would go to the Nationals for Scherzer and Trey Turner. Gray and Ruiz are rated by ESPN's Kyler McDaniel as the Dodgers' top two prospects entering the season. So these are not low-level prospects that are leaving and they're not going to be when you're getting Max Scherzer and Trey Turner in return. So, again, they're trying to finalize that deal and should be they got until 3 o'clock today before the trade deadline. Scherzer's 8-4 this season with a 2.76 ERA and 19 starts. Three-time Cy Young Award winner. He is scheduled to become a free agent after 2021. So the Dodgers, again, all in here trying to win another championship, and they're trading a lot of prospects away for a guy that is a free agent in about 2 or 3 months. So now I think Dodgers would probably make a play and try to re-sign Max Scherzer if they could. He did have the right to block any trade because of his 10-5 rights, 10 years of Major League service and 5 with the same team, but was reportedly open to going to the West Coast and has signed off on joining the Dodgers. He's owed $35 million, final year of his 7-year, $210 million contract. The final 3 years of that deal will be paid in deferrals from 2022 to 2028. It says 2022 to 2018. We're well past 2018. So, again, Max Scherzer and Trey Turner appear to be headed to the Washington Nationals. Also, the Yankees making a move, another move yesterday. They'd already traded for Joey Gallo from the Rangers. And then on Thursday, the Yankees acquired all-star first baseman Anthony Rizzo from the Chicago Cubs. Right-handed pitcher Alexander Vizcaino and outfielder Kevin Alcantara, both minor leaguers, will head from New York to Chicago in that trade. So, again, trade deadline is today, and that's at 3 o'clock this afternoon. We're seeing if there's anything new. And there used to be a spot where they would show all the trades in one place, and now it's just like, where is everything at? For everything that's going on. The Padres have acquired Daniel Hudson, right-handed reliever from the Washington Nationals. So that's something that's happened. Hudson is currently on the COVID-19 list, but he's 4-1 with a 2.20 ERA and 31 appearances this season. So Daniel Hudson headed to the Padres. There is talk that Eric Hosmer could be let go by the Padres. They would love to find a taker for his contract, or at least part of it, owed $59 million after this season through 2025. Hosmer's actually not having a good season. I actually looked that up here yesterday. It's been a rough, one of his worst seasons, actually, since early on when he joined the Royals. And it's just not been great for Eric Hosmer this year. He has only 8 home runs. He's played in 95 games. Last year, he had 9 home runs in 38 games. He's had 8 home runs and 48 RBI, 364 plate appearances. He's hitting just .273 this year. His on-base percentage is just .336, and his slug is just .385. Give you an idea, that .385 slugging percentage, his worst since 2012, his second year in the big leagues, when he hit .350, when he had a .359 slug. His batting average is also, it's actually a little bit better than some of his worst seasons, but he was .232 back in 2012. His second full year with the Royals. Man, all these numbers. OPS is .721. It is the fourth worst in his career. It's strikeouts at 59. So, I mean, his strikeouts aren't as bad as they have been at some points of his career. And he does have 28 walks, which is, average probably for him at this time of year, a little below average. But Haas is not having a good season there in San Diego for what they are paying him. Again, $59 million through 2025 still left on his deal. And so if somebody would take that, I wouldn't be surprised to see the Padres trade Eric Hosmer. But I don't see anybody taking that contract right now the way that Haas is playing. So they're going to have to eat some of that salary, I feel like, if they're going to try to trade him. I don't think anybody's going to be like, yeah, give me that $59 million for a guy that's hit 8 home runs, 48 RBI, and 95 games this year and striking out and has a slugging percentage of .385. That's not a good slug. Again, that's the second worst of his career for Eric Hosmer. So it could be interesting to see if he ends up anywhere else. Again, I wouldn't anticipate anybody wants to take on that contract. So San Diego might be stuck with that here unless they want to, again, eat some of that money and then get rid of him. So that's where we're at with MLB trade deadline, again, coming up here this afternoon at 3 o'clock. All right, NBA draft last night in Brooklyn at the Barclays Center. Nobody's shocked.
With the first pick in the 2021 NBA draft, the Detroit Pistons select Cade Cunningham from Oklahoma State University.
It's funny to hear a lot of talk about, you know, oh, this guy might go instead of Cunningham, or they might pick this guy. There's actually three guys the Pistons are looking at possibly taking with the number one pick. No, there's one guy that the Pistons are looking at taking with the number one pick, and it was Cade Cunningham out of Oklahoma State. Cade on being the number one pick in last night's draft.
It's still crazy to be in the moment. Like, words can't really explain the emotions, you know what I'm saying? It's everybody's so happy. My family's all here. You know, to be able to spend this moment with them, it's a blessing. I know my name was the first name called, but, you know, I didn't do this by myself. You know, I feel like I have number one pick. I have a number one pick family, honestly. You know, I have a blessed, you know, supporting system. I can't even talk right now. I got so many emotions going on. I'm just so happy to be here, and, you know, I'm ready to see what I can do in the next level. Detroit Pistons, I'm all the way in. Let's do it.
Here we go. Cade Cunningham all the way in for the Detroit Pistons as he is the number one pick. Some people thought that Jalen Green might jump him. That did not happen. Actually, the top five players picked when it was planned, but the order was a little bit different at 4 and 5. Jalen Green of the G League Ignite went to the Rockets at number 2, as expected, followed by, as expected, USC's Evan Mobley, number 3 to the Cavaliers. And then it was between two freshmen where the Raptors kind of surprised some at number 4, taking Florida State's Scotty Barnes instead of Gonzaga's Jalen Suggs. The Magic wasted no time and said, hey, Suggs is on the board. He's now our guy. And Suggs was picked by the Magic at number 5 there on Thursday night. The rest of the top 10 picks, Josh Giddey from Australia was taken number 6 by the Thunder. Jonathan Kuminga from the Republic of Congo, he's been playing in G League Ignite as well, I believe, here this last season. And he's headed at number 6 overall to the Warriors. Or excuse me, he was number 7 overall. Number 8 overall pick, Franz Wagner from Michigan, going to the Magic. Davion Mitchell of Baylor. Not a lot of people had him projected top 10, but he goes number 9 to the Kings. And Zaire Williams of Stanford, another one that really was not projected to go in the top 10, goes to the Pelicans at number 10. James Bouknight of UConn, number 11 to the Hornets. And my Spurs taking a guy that was projected to be late first round at best, shooting guard Joshua Primo from Alabama. Just 18 years old, will be the youngest player in the NBA next year, next season. Spurs taking a shooting guard there at 12. Chris Duarte of Oregon, number 13. Moses Moody to the Pacers. Duarte went to the Pacers. Moses Moody to the Warriors at number 14. Corey Kispert of Gonzaga at number 15 to the Wizards. Alperen Şengün of Turkey went number 16 to the Oklahoma City Thunder. Trey Murphy III of Virginia, number 17 to the Grizzlies. Trey Mann of Florida, number 18 to the Thunder. Kai Jones of Texas, number 19. The Knicks drafted him, and I'm going to find out real quick where, because there was a trade on that. Some of these picks will be traded. I don't have all that in front of me. Kai Jones' draft rights to the Texas forward will be traded to the Hornets. So look at some of the guys that are going in such places. Knicks also traded 21 and 25 picks with the Clippers, so Keon Johnson taken by the Knicks from Tennessee at number 21 will be traded to the Clippers, while the Knicks will get Quentin Grimes, whom the Clippers took at number 25. The former Kansas Jayhawk, Houston Cougar, headed to the Knicks once all those draft rights are all taken care of. That's first round picks there last night to kind of roll through and see any other notables. Miles McBride of West Virginia was a sixth round pick at number 36 to the Oklahoma City Thunder. Jared Butler of Baylor went as the number 40 overall pick to the New Orleans Pelicans in the second round. Texas's Greg Brown taken by the Pelicans as well at the 43rd overall pick. Delano Barton from Nebraska was taken as a 46th overall pick by the Raptors. Luka Garza of Iowa was taken 52nd pick by the Pistons. So some of the, and the Texas Jericho Sims taking the 58th pick by the Knicks as well. So just some of the highlights from the NBA draft on Thursday night. The big highlight happened before the draft even started. A blockbuster trade on the NBA triple-double machine. Russell Westbrook will be joining Anthony Davis and LeBron James in L.A. with the Lakers. The big three is set now for the Lakers. Russell Westbrook headed to L.A. in the deal from the Wizards in exchange for Kyle Kuzma, Montrezl Harrell, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, and the number 22 pick Thursday night, which was Kentucky power forward Isaiah Jackson. So all of those players are headed to the Wizards, while the Lakers will get Russell Westbrook. Interesting to see how the dynamic will work out. Russell Westbrook and Buddy Hield were both guys that the Lakers were looking at trying to trade for before the draft last night. I don't know if the Hield thing fell through or if Westbrook was the guy they wanted all along. I did see a tweet from somebody last night that said every other NBA team would, without a doubt, take Buddy Hield over Russell Westbrook. That is a false tweet. I'm just going to put it out there right now. Russell Westbrook is a triple-double machine, as we know. Listen, I know Buddy Hield is younger. He probably shoots better. Not probably. He shoots better than Russell Westbrook. He's younger, has a different dynamic than what Russell Westbrook brings to the table. But you will not ever convince me that every other team other than the Lakers would pick Buddy Hield over Russell Westbrook. You might think they should, and I might think they should. Anybody might think they should. But that's not going to be the case. There are going to be plenty of teams that want Russell Westbrook's services on their team. They want the fact that he can do all three of those things, and he can, you know, he's not the greatest defender in the league, but can play a little defense. And so you would add Russell Westbrook, and I think a lot of teams would do that if they had the capital to do it and if they really wanted to finish out a big three like the Lakers are trying to do, right? Because that seems to be what you need right now. Now, the Bucks don't have that. Drew Holiday, when he plays like he did a couple times in the finals, then yeah, they have the big three with Giannis, Chris Middleton, and Drew Holiday. The Bucks were the NBA champions. That's why I bring them up. But Suns don't have a quote-unquote big three that you would talk about. Chris Paul and Devin Booker. DeAndre Ayton could be that guy sometimes, but was not consistently that big three type of player yet. He's still young, could get to that point. But, a lot of these people want that big three to compete. You know, you have Durant, Irving, and Harden with the Nets now, and so now the Lakers have that with LeBron, AD, and Russ there in LA. So big trade there. Obviously, we'll see how it all plays out. You don't know how that's going to play out until they get out on the court and work together and try to create a little chemistry. I think at times there could be issues with some of the shots that Russell Westbrook has decided to take in his career, but I think with having LeBron and AD on your team, that kind of changes maybe your dynamic and how you're thinking. And Westbrook can, kind of dish off and use his skills in that area. So you've got two superstars on your team that really can pass the ball. They can score. They can do a lot of different things. So it'll be interesting to see the dynamic with LeBron and Russ on the same team there in L.A. coming up in the 2021-22 season. So that trade has happened again. Russell Westbrook headed to L.A. from the Washington Wizards. All right, we have a couple other things we're still going to talk about. Olympics continuing on. But before we do that, I want to go back to local sports because American Legion State Tournament is going on in Pittsburgh. Silver Lake beat Republic County 13-1 in Pool A there yesterday. Republic County's 0-2 in Pool A now. Their final game in pool play will be tonight against Larned at 6 o'clock. And also, six local athletes will be competing in the upcoming USA Track and Field National Junior Olympic Track and Field Championships in Houston, Texas, July 31st through August 7th. Mika Jordan of Beloit is competing in the 8 and under girls turbo javelin, and three athletes are competing at the 14-year-old level, including Addison Budke in the long jump and shot put, Tatum Seifert in the shot put and discus, and Autumn Lorenz in the javelin. On the boys' side, Griffin Johnson will throw the shot put and discus at the 12-year-old level, and Eli Johnson will compete in those same two events at the 14-year-old level. And we hope to have some of those results. I don't think anybody's going out on and competing until Sunday, I believe is what it was. We'll have results from those once we get them. Hopefully we can find those relatively easy and have those for you next week as they go on with the National Junior Olympic USA Track and Field Championships in Houston. So best of luck to all those local youngsters that are competing at the Junior Olympics coming up beginning this weekend through next week. All right, now it's time to our daily chat about the Big 12 Conference realignment, which is probably for some people getting old talking about this, but there's something, sometimes it's just minor, sometimes it's just stuff we expect to happen, but something new seems to happen each day. And yesterday we told you on the sports ticket the SEC presidents and chancellors would be meeting. It was not clear whether there would be a vote, but it seemed like there probably would be because they're expediting this process. And the 14 SEC presidents and chancellors did vote unanimously on Thursday to extend invitations to Big 12's Oklahoma and Texas to join their league, leaving one final formality before the deal is done, which is OU and Texas have to officially accept the offer, which could happen as soon as today. And both of their Board of Regents for Texas and Oklahoma have scheduled separate special meetings this morning in which athletic conference membership will be discussed. Oklahoma's Regents will meet in Oklahoma City. Texas's Regents will meet via conference call. I expect that all to be done this morning in Texas and Oklahoma to say, yep, we want in. They're the ones that formally first asked for admittance into the SEC and looked for membership. They're the ones that sent that out after they had told the Big 12 they were leaving the conference after the grant of rights expires in 2025. So it's just a formality now, and it just takes that official vote from the Board of Regents from each school to say, yep, we're going to the SEC. Again, I expect that to happen here this morning, and I think most everybody does. SEC Commissioner Greg Sankey said, quote, today's unanimous vote is both a testament to the SEC's longstanding spirit of unity and mutual cooperation, as well as a recognition of the outstanding legacies of academic and athletic excellence established by the University of Oklahoma and Texas. I laugh when I read these things and they say legacies of academic excellence. Yeah, that's why Texas and Oklahoma are going to the SEC. It's their academic excellence. To be fair, and thankfully they do say their legacies of athletic excellence as well, which could be true or could be not for Texas. They do have a legacy of athletic excellence. I guess they have won a national championship within the last 20 years, so yeah, I guess you could count that. But it's just funny when you hear these quotes. I love everybody just trying to be politically correct, try to say the right things, do this, do that. And this latest, Bob Boolsby, just stop. Like, you absolutely do not have to release a statement after every single thing happens. And I keep tweeting the gif of Mr. Rogers putting the clown mask on every time I see one of these Big 12 statements. Why are we doing this? You don't have to do it every time. But here's Bob Boolsby yesterday after the news comes that they officially, SEC has officially voted and extended invitations to Texas and Oklahoma. Big 12 Commissioner Bob Boolsby says, quote, today's SEC announcement reaffirms that these plans have been in the works with ongoing discussions between the parties and television partner for some time. We are disappointed these discussions went as far as they did without notice to or inclusion of other Big 12 members. Despite our concerns for the process and for the overall health of college athletics, we will do everything possible to make sure that the student athletes at both universities enjoy an excellent experience throughout the remaining 4 years of their participation in competition in the Big 12 Conference, unquote. Why do you care? They're going to have an excellent experience throughout the remaining doubtfully 4 years of their participation in competition in the Big 12 Conference. You don't owe Oklahoma and Texas any favors right now. So why come out with a statement? You're mad at these guys. Oh, they shouldn't have gone behind our back. SEC shouldn't have done this. You're trying to destabilize our conference, ESPN. Why are you trying to be nice to Texas and Oklahoma right now? No reason for it. They're leaving. But you're not going to be nice to them in the courts if you have to take it to that point. And you're saying to be nice throughout the final 4 years remaining for their participation in competition in the Big 12 Conference. You're hoping upon hope that it actually is 4 years when you say that, when you have that quote in your statement. This is like, what are we doing? You don't have to release a statement. And he's probably going to release a statement today after Texas and Oklahoma decide, yeah, we're going in. He's going to be, well, today's announcement from Texas and Oklahoma reaffirms that these plans, it's going to be the same words, just different. Well, it's going to be the same message, just a couple different words. I guess everything's the same that comes out from Bob Boolsby. Just reactive statements to everything that happens. This is what the problem is with the Big 12. And this is why you don't need a statement after everything happens. You continue to just show how reactive you are to everything in the world by releasing a statement every day something different happens with this. And just let it play its course because you know it's playing its course and it's all happening. And just be like, once it's all over, if you want to be that reactive person and say something about it and put some BS statement together and release it out to the to the world and say, hey, Big 12 is disappointed. You're trying to destabilize our conference, ESPN, which, by the way, ESPN has responded to that, where Big 12 said cease and desist with helping other conferences try to pull our schools from our conference. Initially, the ESPN reply was just one sentence that said the accusations you have made are entirely without merit. And that was it. It did add a little bit more to that. Had a full paragraph in the end of that. They said, to be clear, ESPN is engaged in no wrongful conduct, and thus there is nothing to cease and desist. We trust this will put the matter to rest, unquote. It won't put the matter to rest with Bob Bowlesby. The Big 12 come up with something weird, crazy again, and threaten to cease and desist. This. Okay, you don't have proof that ESPN was in these meetings. And even, like, I think we all know that ESPN is a part of this. It's not that hard to figure out, but where are you going to get them at? Where are you going to be like, oh, you destabilized our conference and we're taking you to court because of it? It's not going to go anywhere, I don't feel like. And so release all these statements and just continue to be reactive. So today, Texas and Oklahoma, their Board of Regents will both most likely go ahead and finish this whole process and vote to join, which technically right now they say they're joining the SEC on July 1st of 2025, which the grant of rights ends on June 30th of 2025. So July 1st would be the first date officially without having to pay any exit fees or anything like that, that Oklahoma and Texas can get in. But again, I don't think anybody thinks that Oklahoma and Texas are going to be like, oh, we are leaving the conference, but we're waiting 4 years to do it. You don't cause this kind of uproar and just stick around for 4 years. Now, maybe the 18 months that you're supposed to give them notice, the Big 12, before you leave, that might happen. But it's crazy to think that Oklahoma and Texas are going to be here in 2025, and that's when they're leaving. So, again, just as the world turns on conference realignment, Gene Taylor spoke with K-State voice of the Wildcats, Wyatt Thompson, kind of asked the AD session, and Gene Taylor had an update kind of on where K-State sits in this with conference realignment and kind of taking some digs at Oklahoma. I don't completely agree with what he's saying, that this is why you need to do this, but here's what Gene Taylor said about the whole situation.
Still yeah. support K-State and, yeah. and don't panic and still come to the games. And, you know, when Oklahoma comes into town, we need to fill the place. We need to let them remind Oklahoma how important Big 12 is and what they're walking away from. And but more importantly, I think, to not panic and that we are a great program. We've always thrived on the support we've had from our fan base. And to just understand that you may not hear a lot of stuff, but there's a lot of stuff being done behind the scenes. We are talking constantly. We're meeting 2 and 3 times a week. And just because I'm not saying something to the press or we're not saying something collectively doesn't mean work isn't being done.
So the message of that is obviously we're working. We're not just sitting twiddling our thumbs. His message is supposed to be, hey, we're going to figure something out here for Kansas State University and what's going to fit us the best. No, the other part of that message, get out there, sell out Oakland. The game's usually packed anyway when Oklahoma comes to town. And got to show them what they're missing by leaving the Big 12. Dean, I like you, but they're not going to see anything from that. That's doing nothing. That's just something that Dean says because he's frustrated that Oklahoma's leaving. Show them what they're missing by and show them how important the Big 12 is. Listen, the SEC is way more important for Texas and Oklahoma than the Big 12. It pains me to say it. It probably pains you all to hear it. But these are facts, and we've talked about it enough from that aspect of it going forward that we probably don't even need to talk about it much anymore. But the millions and millions, millions upon millions of dollars that Oklahoma and Texas are going to get that are in addition and way past what they would get from the Big 12 are all the reasons they need to show how important the SEC is and how unimportant the Big 12 is for their future. Basically what it comes down to. Again, I credit Gene Taylor for saying some of those things. I definitely credit him for saying, don't panic right now. We're doing our best, and we're going to try to put this university in a situation to continue to succeed at a higher level. And so how that all plays out, we don't know. We're going to find out. Obviously, I think That's more of what we're focusing on now. We know that Texas and Oklahoma are leaving. We know that SEC has officially invited them to join their conference. And we know that their Board of Regents are meeting today and likely going to vote on all that this morning and officially kind of seal all this. And then the only thing we don't know is when they will go and what's going to happen to the remaining eight members of the Big 12. If they're going to be able to keep a viable conference, which is, again, as we've well documented, seems to be it's going to be tough to do. But again, we will keep an eye on all that with Big 12 and conference realignment. I want to go back one time real quick here. There was something to the NBA draft. There was something that really, man, it hit the heart last night at the NBA draft. They finished off the lottery picks, which go through number 14. And Adam Silver came up and did a really cool thing and paid tribute to Terrence Clark, the 19-year-old basketball prospect out of Kentucky who died in a car accident earlier this year. He had pulled his name or put his name in the draft, and he would have been drafted, there's no question. And so Commissioner Adam Silver paused the draft, invited Clark's mother, sister, and brother onto the stage as the NBA selected Terrence Clark. And it was a very moving situation. It was a very moving experience, for obviously, for them. One thing that killed me was Terrence Clark's brother's really young. And when he saw his picture up on the screen there, he kind of pointed. He's like, look, there's Terrence. And so, I mean, that's tough. That hit me hard. But it was, what a moment it was to kind of step back. Everybody was captivated with it, right? Like, the world paused around you when you were seeing all that happen. A classy move by the NBA and Adam Silver to draft Terrence Clark last night, who, again, passed away earlier this year in a car accident, the 19-year-old prospect out of Kentucky. So, wanted to put that in there and say how cool and thoughtful that was for the NBA to do that. All right, we wrap the sports ticket here with an update on the Olympics. The United States soccer team, the women's soccer team, has kind of been a struggle for them this tournament. They had a draw but in their last match, but were able to, with all the points and things, get into the quarterfinals and into the medal round, and they have now moved on to the semifinals. It wasn't easy today. It was a 2-2 tie, and then they went through all the overtimes and extra time and went to penalty kicks. And Rose Lavelle, Alex Morgan, Kirsten Press, and Megan Rapinoe all made their penalty kicks, and they won on penalty kicks over the Netherlands 4-2. So the U.S. moves on to the semifinals in the Olympics on the women's side. The women's basketball team beat Japan yesterday 86-69 to win their 51st straight Olympic game. And that goes back to winning the bronze medal game in the 1992 Olympics. 13-point average margin of victory in the first two games in Japan is far below that of the previous six Olympics in which the Americans ran through teams, but they have won, again, 51 in a row. Asia Wilson scored 20. Breonna Stewart had 15 to lead the U.S. over Japan. Again, 86-69 was the final in that one. Early this morning there in Tokyo, Novak Djokovic looking for that Golden Slam, which includes all four Grand Slam tournaments during the year and an Olympic gold medal. He won his first set 6-1 over Alexander Zverev of Germany, but the Serbian lost 6-3, 6-1 in the next two sets, ending his bid for the Golden Slam at the Tokyo Olympics. Zverev moves on to the championship, and he'll take on Karen Khachanov, who beat Spain's Pablo Carreño Busta in straight sets. So it's Zverev against Khachanov in the championship of the Olympics on the men's tennis side of things. So there's some of the things that have happened in the Olympics. We can tell you the updated medal count. Hey, China's closed in on the U.S. total medals right now. The U.S. has 41. China's at 40 now. As the U.S. was starting to pull away a little bit, China has the most gold medals with 19. Japan has 17, and the U.S. has 14. So obviously U.S. likely will get some more medals once the track and field portion of the Summer Olympics start, and they'll continue to get medals. We'll probably win that total medal count like they normally do, but it's interesting to see that they're just one ahead right now in total medals at the Summer Olympics. The Summer Olympics could have gone better for the U.S. is what we're saying. But again, things continue here today and through the weekend. We'll give you another update on the Olympics coming up the start of next week on our sportscast and the sports ticket. So that closes out the sports ticket for today. We hope everybody has a great weekend, and we will talk to you again on Monday here on Waterside Wake Up and the sports ticket on Katy Country 94.
State, regional, and national sports talk on your schedule. The Sports Ticket Podcast. Subscribe via Apple, Google, and TuneIn Podcasts or sunflowerstateradio.com.